Hey, podcasters, welcome to another edition of Pickup Truck Plus SUV Talk. I'm your host, Tim Estradahl. On today's show, we have sales. It is December 1st, which is the first day of sales from November coming out. And it's a big day industry-wise. We get to see what happened last month, see what the consumers are buying, and see what's going to cause people to lose some sleep or not. So let's dive into sales. I always think these are interesting numbers, looking at monthly and then looking at long-term as far as year-over-year growth. I'll have all the numbers on the website on pickuptrucktalk.com later on today. But a few items stand out to me. Number one, Ford had a big month. They had 7,000 units sold more on the F-Series than they did in prior November 2015. They've had a back-and-forth year. They've had some months up, some months a little down. They really held the line on sales, and they haven't really had the big breakout like you would think they would. But the Super Duty's out. The Raptor is going to be out. Actually, speaking of the Raptor, we'll be driving that next week in Southern California. I'll be having lots of commentary on that next week's show. So they're up 10.6%. Year-to-date, they're up 5.5%. So it's a steady growth. It just, like I said, they've had some good months and bad months. Looks like they're going to end on a high note. As Silverado was down, it's up a little bit year-over-year. A little bit down year-over-year, down 3.2%. What's interesting with Chevy is whenever Chevy has a truck month, their sales go up. Whenever they don't, their sales go down. It's just that's consumers know it, and they have a boom and bust there. Ram truck is up 8%. They've been at steady growth the last couple of years. They're really becoming a better player in the segment and really pretty competitive. What's interesting also is besides those full size makers, we have the midsize. The midsize trucks are continuing to sell well. The Tacoma is up 15%. If you consider that truck was like, what, 10 years old, and they did some updates to it this year. It really hasn't changed a whole lot. The new truck does drive a lot better. It's got a bunch of changes, but it's not like it's, oh my gosh, that much better. It's interesting, though, because the sales have been, oh my gosh, that much better. Sales, ever since the Colorado and the Canyon came out, Tacoma sales have climbed. That whole segment has been reawoken. It's incredible to watch. The Colorado was up 39%. They actually had almost 8,700 units sold. That's big. They've been around 6,000, 5,000, 6,000 for several months. They're up 30% on the year. Nissan Frontier has been a fantastic story this year. The oldest truck in the whole market. The thing hasn't been updated in, maybe the Iraq War? Maybe Operation Freedom? Iraqi Freedom? I think that's the last time that truck was upgraded. No, it's been maybe closer to that. But anyways, it's up 41% on the year, and it has also been helped by the Colorado and Canyon coming back in the segment. Those two vehicles really got customers interested in midsize trucks again. What's interesting about the Frontier is it's the cheapest truck on the market. I think it's like $3,000, $4,000 below any other truck's MSRP. And finally, to wrap things up, we have the Honda Ridgeline and Nissan Titan. They're always on the bottom of the chart because their volume's low. However, they're good trucks. What's interesting with the Ridgeline is it's still selling about 3,000 units a month. It's been selling consistently to previous owners of Ridgelines. I don't know that they are conquesting any new customers with that pickup. The Nissan Titan came in. It's up 57% on the year, but it's against a very weak prior year because the older models just got phased out. The XD and the Half Ton are both on the market now. It's sold 3,300 units. I still think that's just okay. I really think they need to be to 10,000 unit range. There's a lot of factors. I have different stories on the website. You can read about different factors. I think that is. But I will tell you, the other day I was watching football, and I noticed the advertisement for Nissan trucks, and they have some incentives going out on those trucks right now. I think that's going to spur things. I think that's really going to spur stuff up. As somebody told me a long time ago, it doesn't matter what you have in your truck, doesn't matter what features you have, you put cash in the hood, and customers will buy it. So speaking of cash in the hood, and speaking of pricing, KBB had an interesting story come out yesterday with the sales numbers. And I hadn't been aware of this, but apparently they do it every month. They list the average truck pricing for pickup truck pricing on a month-to-month basis and year-over-year basis. And what's interesting here is whenever you talk to somebody about full-size trucks or mid-size trucks, they always talk about price. They talk about how expensive these trucks have become and how they're not the simple workhorses they used to be, the cheap trucks. And the data proves it. So November 2016, the month that just ended, the average transaction price for a full-size pickup was $46,473. Now, it doesn't that price does not include consumer incentives, which is a big deal because, like I said earlier, Nissan Titan, cash on the hood, people will buy it more. However, you look at year 2015, November 2015, transaction data was $45,985. So it has trended up about $500 in the past $500 in the past year. And year over year, it's 1.1% higher. So it's I theorize that we could hit the $50,000 mark for full-size trucks because if you do $500 a year, 10 years, you're right there. Mid-size trucks also. Mid-size truck pricing is interesting. So the mid-size pickup truck, we go back and forth, what they call them, pickups or trucks or whatever. I'm just going to call them pickup trucks. The November 2016 transaction price was $32,169. This was down about $600 from October, but it was up about $600 from the year prior. So from November year over year, it's up 2.1%. So in both cases, the trucks are getting more expensive. What also is really interesting from this press release I saw, and it's on the website, pickuptrucktalk.com. You can look at all the numbers. They talk about the manufacturers and the manufacturer's average transaction price and what has changed. And what you'll notice with this is that every manufacturer that sells a truck and is a big pickup truck manufacturer is upwards in the $38,000, $36,000, $39,000 range, okay? When you look at car manufacturers, like really heavy car, like Hyundai, Kia, that doesn't offer a car, that doesn't offer a truck, they're at $24,000 because they don't have that truck, that luxury truck that they sell for $50,000 would really change that pricing for them. You look at American Honda, Acura and Honda, their price is about $27,000. They have the Ridgeline, but they don't sell many units of it. And the RTLE that we drove tops out at $44,000. So they don't have that $50,000, $60,000 truck, even $80,000 truck if you're going to talk about heavy-duty trucks. And then Toyota runs out at $31,887. And again, they sell quite a few Tundras and quite a few Tacomas, so that helps them quite a bit. But still, they're not anywhere near the big full-size truck makers. So just some interesting data. I thought it was pretty interesting what they were able to glean from the sales data that last month and kind of talk about, you know, it's trucks are getting more expensive. They just really are. Finally, for some offbeat news, we had a funny recall happen this week. So Fiat Chrysler of America, Ram, that builds Ram trucks, issued a recall for 2016 Ram 1500s, or are they 2017? Let me look at that real quick. I think they're 2017 Ram 1500s. Sorry, my news story doesn't say what model year they are. Anyways, the trucks have the wrong badge on them. Yes, that's right. They're V6 Ram 1500s, so they're the Pentastar V6 ones, that the factory accidentally put the Ram 5.7 liter V8 badge on the side of it. So what's under the hood doesn't match the badge on the outside. What's interesting with this is that, you know, it's a snafu. Somebody in the production line got messed up, and that happens. However, you got to wonder what dealer sold that Hemi, wannabe Hemi, the V6 version, for $1,100 more than it was supposed to be, because it's supposed to be $1,100 less when you go to the V6. So some scrupulous dealer out there maybe have sold some trucks that they shouldn't have at a higher price point, or paperwork got messed up. I mean, you know, you look at the VIN number, you look at the information, and then it's got a Hemi badge on it. So I'm sure that created a lot of confusion from consumers. And it looks like about 1,100 pickups are going to take care of that. They're going to take those badges off, because we don't need those stinking badges, and then they're going to either issue refunds or what have you. But yes, if you, or maybe as a consumer, you want to keep that, because you could sell that to a customer, or when you go to sell it as a used vehicle, you could make a little money off it, I guess. So funny things like this happen. They'll replace it, they'll take care of it. The Ram's done a great job taking customers. It's just kind of a funny note. And that's it for the news this week. Up next, we have our first guest of the program. We'll talk to Hyundai, talk to Trevor Lai. He is the truck manager for the Hyundai Santa Fe that I drove, I think like 2-3 weeks ago, was really impressed by it, and I really wanted to talk to them more about their vehicle. Following that, we'll have Doug Richman. He is with the Aluminum Transportation Group. He's going to talk to us about aluminum in automotive and how long they've been using aluminum in automotive, and kind of give us the other side of the equation when we talked with the steel manufacturing group a couple weeks ago. So stay tuned for more. And welcome back to more Pickup Truck Plus SUV Talk. I'm your host, Tim Estradol. A few weeks ago, I had the pleasure of driving, actually, it's interesting, my first Hyundai product ever in the 6 years I've been doing this job, which is kind of bizarre, but it happened, and it does happen with the number of manufacturers out there. It was a Hyundai Santa Fe 2017 Limited Ultimate All-Wheel Drive. I think that's all the technical terminology I have for this vehicle. It was really actually fantastic, and I liked it so much, I reached out to Hyundai to have Trevor Lanai on the program. He's a truck program manager. Welcome to the show.
Thank you.
So I was doing some research today, and it was a couple things stood out to me on this vehicle. First of all, it was a full-size CUV of Texas that won the award. I happen to be a Texas Auto Writer Association member who voted on the award, and I know why it won, because it was fantastic. The other thing I thought was interesting today is that a review I read said that this SUV is like the Rodney Dangerfield of SUVs. It gets no respect, and it's shocking. I don't know why. I was looking at sales volume and things, and you have some strong competitors. The Honda Pilot's out there, Toyota Highlander's out there, Nissan Pathfinder, Ford Explorer out there. But, you know, when you guys look at this vehicle versus the competition, you guys start thinking about things. Where do you feel like you sit as far as the vehicle goes? Where's your strengths at?
Talk about Santa Fe, we're actually talking about a lot of coverage that we have here. We've got the Santa Fe Sport, which is our two-row crossover, and then we have our three-row crossover, which is our Santa Fe. So for the larger one, yes, to your point, absolutely, we compete against vehicles such as Explorer, Pathfinder, Highlander, Honda Pilot. Those are the vehicles that we see ourselves positioned against. Now for the Santa Fe Sport, it's more against vehicles such as the outgoing Equinox, the Ford Edge, Nissan Murano, vehicles such as that.
Right, and so this to make sure the audience knows, this is the third row I'm talking about. I had a really beautiful Monaco white with a beige interior, and it has a 3.3 liter V6. We're doing some fuel economy of 19 combined, 17 city, 22 Iowa highway, because I had the old drive, and it came in at 44,000, which is about the top end for this segment when you start thinking about that kind of stuff. What's interesting is in your smaller version, you actually offer a turbo, and larger version, you don't offer a turbo. It seems like the industry is doing a lot of changes, like hybrids and turbos and things. Is fuel economy a big factor when you look at what customers are asking for on this vehicle?
Yeah, it's pretty interesting that you mentioned that. We took a look, a few things to respond to here. I mean, the first thing, of course, for the fuel economy piece, we looked actually at applying the 2-liter turbo to the Santa Fe, the 3-row as well. But we found out in our testing that the actual performance of that was no different than the 3.3-liter V6. So from that point of view, we said, okay, well, customers in this segment particularly are more used to normally aspirated engines.
Right.
So we felt that was a better match for that type of customer.
Yeah, that's interesting that the probably based on physics, right? You have a bigger vehicle with a smaller turbo, doesn't always equal more fuel economy. There's a lot of interesting things about this vehicle in doing research on. It is the first SUV I've seen with three rows that has a third row USB. You guys were able to actually put a third row USB charger. And this, I gotta tell you, this sounds like it's a dumb thing. And when I first started doing a job, this was a dumb thing. But then you got kids. And kids have Kindles, and they have iPads and iPods and things. And the charging that third row, it's a pretty interesting thing. The other thing that I thought was interesting is that the press release, you guys have electric steering with a 32-bit microprocessor.
Yes, we did. That's correct.
Is there some advantage here to how many bits in a microprocessor you have?
We do, actually. We've improved from our earlier Santa Fe, which had a 16-bit processor, which was good. This one has a 32-bit microprocessor, which, of course, your point is like, okay, well, it's a mechanical system. What's the importance here? And the whole point of all this is to have a faster responding power steering system that most naturally mimics a conventional power steering system. So what the customer will receive and experience is probably what you experience, is a very natural driving feeling, a feeling of safety and security and comfort. And that's something that we strive for, not only, you know, for Santa Fe, but for all Hyundai vehicles as well.
Yeah, it has a great driving feel to it. It's interesting because I just happened to stand out to me because I was like, well, yeah, I experienced that. In my notes here, we should back up for a minute and talk about the 2017 model. You redesigned the front fascia, redid the center stack. I noticed that the front fascia redesign looked like it was more about the LED lighting around the fog lamps. Was there something else that I'm missing on that?
No, actually, you nailed quite a bit there. I mean, the grille had been restyled a little bit as well. And what we tried to do specifically with the 2017 facelift was to set apart the Santa Fe Sport and the Santa Fe a little bit in terms of styling. So the front end looks a little bit different. The three-row has a bit more, a few more chrome elements for a bit more upscale feeling that we're trying to go for. The additional LED elements that you do get in the three-row there does set it apart quite a bit. And also to, you know, not only keep pace with, you know, competitive features and what the current trend is in exterior styling, but also to increase, right, that exterior visibility. We need to have that light signature. Like, when you see that in your rearview mirror, well, what is that? What is that? You know, it's something distinctive. That stands apart. That's what Santa Fe is.
Yeah, it definitely created a unique look to it. I liked it. I thought it was it wasn't overly done as some LED. They tried to make this Nike swoosh looking thing happen, but I thought it was just enough. We have new drive modes. We have a sport, equal, and normal mode. Which if you're not aware of what a drive mode is, because you haven't had a new vehicle in the last 5 or 10 years, when you flip this setting, you can get more economical, which is more fuel economy, or more sport, which is more sporty drive, and that typically deals with transmission shift points and gas pedal responsiveness. It's interesting though, on a three row SUV, do you think that the sport feature is a big player in that segment? Is that a feature customers are clamoring for?
It is something that it's for us. It's a great feature to add because it doesn't cost us a whole lot to do it. It doesn't cost the customer at all because we include it in every three row Santa Fe that we have. And the idea here is to attend to the different needs or preferences that each driver may have. You know, my in our family, we have a Santa Fe as well, and she likes to have it pretty heavy on the steering. I like it more in normal mode, for instance, so I'm always changing the modes, even when we drive our car. So it's, even within the same family, it's something that can suit your taste a bit differently, depending how you want to look at it.
Yeah, I think I've used them for times to wake up powertrains, because I think sometimes powertrains are too sluggish. But in this case, I really didn't even need to use it. I thought the 3.3 liter V6 did a great job on powering the size of vehicle. Talking about sales now, I got a note here, asterisk, that says, thank you for separating the volume knob and the tune knob in the two different knob center stack. I'm kind of a knob freak, and that was the first thing I noticed when I saw the pictures of the differences. Anyway, so back to sales. Last month, you're up 17% on the Santa Fe. So you guys combine the Sport and the three-row together, and you're looking at 109,000 units year-to-date. And you look at your competitors, and it's interesting. So the Pilot was down 27%. The Pathfinder is like 6,400 sales. The Explorer was down quite a bit. The Toyota Highlander is the only one that was up in the segment. But I think what's interesting here is you guys are really competitive in the segment. And when you look at the models in that segment, everybody's new, everybody's fresh. Is there a lot of pressure to constantly keep things fresh in this segment?
Yeah, that's the fun of being a product planner, right? Things are changing so dramatically, so quickly. You always got to stay on top of everything. And that was one of the main driving factors that we had going into the facelift here in 2017 model year. We had to add a lot of the safety features. You already mentioned some of them already, right? The DRLs in the front. But we also added some other safety features, such as automatic emergency braking with pedestrian detection, convenience features related to that, such as the smart cruise control that we've got. So a lot of these different things will help customers keep on coming back to the Hyundai portfolio.
Yeah, and real quick, it's interesting, the Hyundai portfolio, the Santa Fe is third best-selling vehicle that you guys offer. What do people really know Hyundai for?
You know, the funny thing is about Hyundai is that you ask people about Hyundai, and the first thing they always tell me is like, hey, that's the company with a 10-year, 100,000-mile warranty, right? And we said, that's right, because we stand behind our powertrains that much. And it's something that we're known for and that we're proud of. So that's something that comes standard absolutely with every Hyundai. Doesn't matter if it's Santa Fe, doesn't matter if it's a Nazera, Accent, Sonata, everyone's got one.
Yeah, it's interesting you bring that up because it reminds me that this is something happened to this vehicle I've never had happen before. I actually had a neighbor stop by and approach me and hop in it and wanted to go for a test drive. She's owned two previous Hyundai Santa Fes and didn't like the color of her recent one, so she wanted to buy a new one. And she drove home the warranty in my head, pounded into my head. She kept saying, best vehicle warranty in class, best vehicle warranty. And it's interesting, 10 years... when the average consumer cycles out a vehicle every 3 to 4 years, you guys are really getting a big peace of mind out to customers.
Absolutely. We do have that big peace of mind, but you know what they also say quite a bit, right? The best warranty is the one you never have to use.
Yeah.
So, you know, if it's one of those things that you're backed up in year 8, year 9, year 10, hey, you know what? I've had that warranty, but I've never had to use it. That's the best thing there, right? So that's how much we stand behind our products.
Yeah. Well, and if you haven't checked out the Hyundai Santa Fe, I would encourage you to check out a dealership, especially looking for that third row SUV, which is a hot commodity for all families out there. You need to have that additional space for extra kids, extra cargo. And check it out. It's very competitive. It's a very competitive vehicle, and the steering is great. And I'll tell you what, that third row SUV comes in really handy. And we'll be right back with more. And welcome back to more Pickup Truck Plus SUV Talk. I'm your host, Mr. Dahl. On today's program, we have a special guest. We have Richmond. He's the Vice President of Engineering and Technology for Kaiser Aluminum. He's a technical chairman of the Aluminum Transportation Group. They are a advocacy group for aluminum products. So welcome, Doug, to the show. I'm just a mess today. Welcome, Doug, to the show.
Okay, Tim. Thank you. Glad to be here.
So we're talking aluminum today because a few weeks ago, if you remember on the podcast, we had talked with Dave Anderson of the Steel Institute and discussing the future of automotive. There's a lot of driving factors that are changing the automotive industry, and one of those is material use in vehicles. And a key part of that is dropping emissions and reducing and increasing fuel economy. That way, better for the environment and better for our wallets. And aluminum is a key product in this. There's a variety of vehicles that have come out already, like the 2016 F-150, which you referenced quite a bit on drivealuminum.org, which rightfully so, has really changed the game of what aluminum is doing in the marketplace. As we move forward and looking back, what are the key strengths of aluminum?
Well, the number one attribute that's very popular today is lightweight. It's strong. It's one of the highest strength per unit mass materials that are commonly used in the automotive industry, and it is a very effective material for achieving significant mass reduction in vehicles. Most people think about, you talked about the Ford F-150, but the average vehicle in the United States today has 400 pounds of aluminum on it, and then the Ford F-150 has quite a bit additional with the body. Another 700 pounds. So, but the aluminum has been an important and growing importance in the auto industry for improvement of efficiency for the last 40 plus years since 1975. And it's mostly for mass reduction, but other positive attributes that make it very attractive to automakers is very good energy absorption. So the vehicle structures in aluminum absorb energy in a collision, avoiding transmitting that energy into the passenger compartment. And it's naturally corrosion resistant. The grades of aluminum that are used in automobile applications they form a natural oxide layer that is resistant to corrosion. So those are
Right, and breaking these down, you know, there's some stats I kind of pulled up. You for every 10% drop in weight reduction, you have an increase of 5 to 7% in fuel economy. And
correct.
Aluminum is so much lighter than steel and the older steel that it's really easy to get more fuel or better fuel economy quickly with aluminum applications. And, you know, I was thinking about, I've been covering the truck industry now for 5-6 years. I remember when the F-150 came out, and we talked a lot about cost. So that the cost of materials of aluminum is on the core of it, it's higher than steel is. However, you have some interesting thoughts on cost savings that are offset when you use aluminum because you can use less parts and just different savings in that.
Well, there's several elements to this to the cost picture. The material itself is more expensive. Aluminum is more expensive than ferrous product per pound. Typically,
right.
For the major parts of the automobile, it takes 1 pound of aluminum to displace 2 pounds of ferrous product. So we need half as much by mass of material. And then when you downsize downweight components, the other components that support those weights, like the brake system, the wheels and tires, the chassis structure, they can get lighter, and that reduces their cost. And then, like as I said, in the case of things like engines, transmissions, wheels, aluminum being naturally corrosion resistant does not need external coatings and corrosion protection features, so that the cost of those are not required. But when we're at the end of the day, there's still a bit of a cost premium to lightweight, but it's nowhere near as significant as when people will just look at the pure dollar per pound of a particular material.
And all those things are making those other secondary products last longer as well, because they're not getting as much wear and tear because you don't have as much mass, like in the case of brakes, stopping it. Correct?
That's right. That's right. And another thing that we found consistently, whenever vehicles like the F-150 go through a very significant reduction in mass, the customers respond very positively to the ride, improvements in ride, handling, maneuverability, and braking performance, as well as just sure acceleration performance. So there's a lot of attributes besides the fuel economy improvement due to the mass reduction, and of course the durability improvement with the lighter weight carrying less mass around.
Right, and speaking about durability and consumers, I know one of the concerns with aluminum is working with it. So I know body shops have had aluminum in their shops for years. I mean, Jaguar's done aluminum for many, many years. They've been in their repair facility. But with the new F-150 that came out, it was such first time it was mass-produced aluminum. And so now we're discussing having a separate workshop with separate tools to stop cross-contamination. There's concerns about, you know, the shady tree mechanic pounding out a dent. There's some changes there, right? I mean, it's not, repairability is not quite the same.
That's absolutely correct, Tim. I mean, it is a situation where aluminum repair, and there are about 15% of the repair shops in North America are certified now to repair aluminum. Very, very well certified, very true. And what we're learning, and what the industry is learning, is repair of aluminum is not difficult, but it is different. It requires very different skill sets for the technicians. It's the same kinds of skills, but they have to learn how to work with the material. And that's what organizations like ICAR and others in the industry, the training organizations, help shops do. But the shops that have certified technicians that have gone through the training, that understand how to work the material, they find that the repair time and the skills, once they've got them, are as fast as working in steel. Yeah. So they really don't see a big difference once they have the training. And my recommendation to anyone that has a vehicle that's in aluminum, should be sure that when they go in for repair work, that they verify that the repair shop is certified either by the OEM of that vehicle, the manufacturer, or by ICAR, or one of the other recognized national training organizations.
Sure. And speaking of working material, one of the things I was reading recently is that if you use aluminum a lot in body panels, aluminum doesn't have a long period of time where it remembers the body shape that it was stamped with, and it tends to revert back to a flat piece. And so there's some discussion about a new vehicle design becoming more bland because of aluminum usage, that they're not able to shape the material as much. Have you heard anything about that?
I guess, Jim, I don't know. I have not seen that as in any production OEM program. It may be, that's not come to my attention. The aluminum materials that, for instance, the first significant volume aluminum vehicle was, of course, the Audi A8 over 20 years ago, and Jaguar's full product line, as well as Land Rover, have been all aluminum for a few years. There were, in the older grades of aluminum, there were some issues around how tight the detail features could be made. But the newer grades of aluminum that are in the, for instance, the F-150, I'm not aware that there were any constraints, and I've just never heard of a panel relaxing once it's formed.
Hmm. Yeah, it was...
The spring back is different.
Yes.
Folks that have learned, it just like the repair shops, the stamping operations, and the die makers particularly, had to learn different skills in order to properly build a tool to form aluminum. And that, in the Detroit area, that process was from about 10 years ago to about 5 years ago. But most of the major, well, all the major shops that I've talked to in the Detroit area, they regard forming in aluminum. They can do it as fast or faster than they can do a steel tool. And deliver the same performance, in the finished product. So
yeah, it's interesting to know. So I wanted to go through a couple of highlights I saw on the site. And one thing that surprised me, Audi built a bulletproofing around a 2015 vehicle, and they used aluminum in the spare form and in the side sills, which I think was pretty interesting. You just don't think of aluminum being that strong, but in their case, it was the lightweight plus the strength.
Well, Tim, I'll give you even a more unusual thought. The majority of the armor on the Humvees in theater, in the military, in action, have aluminum armor. The plate that the thick plates that if you see photographs of a Humvee in action, those thick plates are aluminum.
You get the Man of Steel image in your head, and then you start thinking aluminum a little bit, and you're like, well, wait a minute, no, actually, the new alloys that come out are just as strong. It's an interesting thought, and it leads me to another thought as well. Is aluminum growth? Currently, have $2.6 billion invested since 2013, and it's getting into heavy duty trucking, because heavy duty trucking is a big use of diesel fuel and a big use of emissions. And so you can see more heavy duty trucks going aluminum as the future unfolds.
Well, Tim, the answer is absolutely, but the thing people don't understand, the heavy duty truck market has been more aluminum intensive than the automobile market for 20 years or more. Several major cab builders have had all aluminum cab structures, or at least the main structure underneath the skin, as aluminum. My company has a plant that for over 25 years has only supplied the heavy-duty truck market. And many of the trailers are all aluminum. And there are some vehicles, and most of the OEM, heavy-duty truck OEM manufacturers, offer a full aluminum frame as an option to their customers. So,
well, it's interesting because for those listeners who didn't know it, aluminum is all around us. We've been using it for years and decades, and
its growth is just a byproduct of not wanting to pay $4 at the gas tank, at the gas pump. So it's a fantastic product. It's exciting time in automotive, and we'll be right back with more pickup truck plus SUV talk. And finally, this week, I want to talk to you about the 2017 Nissan Rogue Hybrid. I got it in the driveway this week. I've been driving it around. I drove it in Georgia at an event, and I drove the gasoline engine versus the hybrid engine and drove them back-to-back. I have to tell you, I really enjoy the hybrid version a lot more than the gasoline version. The hybrid is really a put it in gear and go, and you don't feel anything. It's really bizarre. It's like a really powerful golf cart. You know, you put the accelerator down and it just goes. You don't worry about shift points, you don't worry about noisy engine. It just goes. And it goes really smoothly. I don't have a whole lot of road noise. I don't have a whole lot of discomfort when I'm sitting in the seats. I don't have any concerns, really. It's a smooth riding vehicle. And it doesn't sound from the engine noise. You don't hear it that much. I mean, it's still going to be an entry-level SUV, so you're still going to hear some of that noise from the engine. It's just the way it's going to be. And it's not going to be the quietest thing on the road. But I think for overall, I don't really have any concerns as far as consumers of the segment. I think it stands out as being one of the better SUVs in the segment. Unfortunately, I don't have a pricing for it yet. The pricing will be announced, I think, later this month is what they said in December. But it should be competitive with the Toyota RAV4 Hybrid, which is a similar idea, a very smooth riding vehicle and smooth driving vehicle. I'm happy with it. I have no concerns with the vehicle as it is. I think it's going to drive well. I think its consumers are going to like it. You're going to get upwards of 32 miles per gallon highway. You're going to get that good fuel economy, 28 miles combined. And with hybrids, you can get more better fuel economy out of them if you drive them right. If you hypermile them a little bit, you can use more electric motor inside of it, and you'll get better fuel economy. It does have the CVT transmission, which has been taken to the cleaners by many journalists, but you know, I don't think you feel anything differently. I don't think there's any bad shift points. You don't even feel it. Like I said, it just goes. It does have the 2-liter 4-cylinder engine with the electric motor also as part of it. That's where you get the hybrid version of it. I just don't have a whole lot of negative things to say. I think the interior works well. I think the exterior looks sharp. I think it's got a lot of features as far as it's got the Nissan Connect services. You're going to do the leather wrap shifter. You have the driver's seat and outside mirrors, position memory. So you can just press a button. I think it's got two settings. You can press for yourself or your spouse or you and your kids or whatever. You have a driver seat with power lumbar. I've had some fun driving it around. In the fuel economy has been interesting. So I went hunting that morning and I drove out west about 20 miles into 30 mile per hour wind gust directly right into it, and I got 23 miles per gallon, I think it was, when I got to the farm. And when I turned around and drove back and the wind was on my back, I got 33 miles per gallon. But that happens. Vehicles driving in the wind, they're physics, right? You have this block on wheels, it's just not going to get the fuel economy. But I'm going to drive it Saturday to Denver. I'm going to fly out to do a Ford Raptor event and to go to Nissan. Actually, I have an event with them as well. And I'm going to drive to Denver and I'll do a full long distance comparison. It's about 180 miles to Denver. So that should give me some good feedback. Plus, there's a stretch there that I go to Cheyenne. And when you get to Cheyenne, it's up 3,000 feet, 80 miles per hour, and usually into a crosswind or a headwind. It really is tough on many vehicles' powertrains. I've had several that don't get anywhere near the EPA estimates. So it'll be fun. I'll be driving that out. You'll read more about it on the site as far as what my impressions were that long in the vehicle. It's about a three-and-a-half-hour drive. 2 hours. I could make it in 2 hours, but that'd be breaking the law. I'll give you some future impressions of it. I'll talk to you about the fuel economy. You find more on the site, and you also find updated pricing when it comes out. And that's it for this week's show. Thanks for tuning in. Make sure you check us out at PickupTruckTalk.com. Check us on Facebook on Pickup Truck Talk. Also, subscribe on iTunes. And we'll see you down the road.